Hello and welcome to another episode of the Halloween Podcast. I am your host, Lyle Perez, and today I am doing something very special. If you've been listening to the Halloween Podcast for quite a while, you kind of seen something else in your feed pop up called Lyle's Mystery Theater. It is a sub-podcast to where I talk about old-time radio shows and I play them for you, kind of give you my thoughts on them. And on this episode, I have Kat from the Haunting History Podcast with me because we are going to discuss the world-famous broadcast of War of the Worlds. Kat, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Doing good. So you are an expert on most things that happen with this broadcast.
I try to be.
Good. So you do the other podcast, the Haunting History Podcast. What is that about?
I think it's the name might be a little deceiving, although it's true crime, history, and paranormal. It's not everything's paranormal. It's more history that haunts us. We do stories from the past that typically just never go away. And if we can find a ghost story within the story, you know, it's just that much better.
Oh, nice. Where can people find it?
Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, anywhere that you can listen.
Perfect. So yeah, it's called Haunting History Podcast. Just look it up anywhere. You'll be able to find it. It's a good show. Check it out.
Thank you.
So in this podcast, we are talking about War of the Worlds, the radio broadcast. If you don't know what War of the Worlds is, I played it on yesterday's show. And I probably said something to the effect of, in the next episode, you're going to hear us talk about that broadcast. So stay tuned. And so you heard it already. If you heard it, that thing caused so much mayhem at its time. And I'm going to ask my guest, Kat, I'm going to ask her a couple of questions so we can kind of get a feel for what this was. Because it was something that was very big at the time. It was a big deal.
So, it was huge.
Yes. So we're gonna split this up in sections. So first, we're going to talk about the beginning. This is before the broadcast. So very briefly, Kat, what was the Panic broadcast?
The Panic broadcast was aired on the Columbia Broadcasting System on the Mercury Air Theater on Sunday, October 30th, 1938, the War of the World. And it was intentionally billed as their Halloween episode. It was probably the only thing intentional about the episode.
It was supposed to be scary and on Halloween.
It was supposed to be their Halloween episode. The point was to scare people. I don't think that they meant to scare people at the magnitude that it ended up being.
Yeah, because to put it briefly, they did this as it was a radio broadcast, radio drama, kind of like the things that I play on Lyle's Mystery Theater. But people took it seriously. They thought it was really happening. And if you know the story, War of the Worlds, it's basically about an alien invasion that comes down and starts killing everybody. That's
it. With gas, trying pretty much to wipe out Earth and its beings. That's the point. That was the story. That was the story H.G. Wells wrote of War of the Worlds.
Yeah, and the people took this seriously. They actually thought it was happening. There was, you know, that's why they call it the Panic broadcast, because people were actually panicking, thinking that this was an actual real news story. It wasn't a radio drama.
Correct. There's a couple reasons why they think that people panicked the way they did is because the Mercury Theater on air, the radio show that was on, was not the most popular watch show on Sunday evenings. The most popular watch show was Edgar Bergen, the Ventriloquist, which was on NBC. And on his show, both shows started at 8 p.m. He was first up on his show. And most people listened to that. It was very family friendly. It was funny. And it was the number one show on the Sunday night time slot. So what a lot of people think happened is that people were tuned in to Edgar Bergen, and at 8:12 he finished his set with his dummy and switched over to a rather unknown singer. So people probably changed, just like we channel surf now, they did the same thing back then. So when she started singing, people started switching stations to find something more interesting to listen to. And by 8:12, War of the Worlds was fully underway. And so when they switched over, they would have caught it in the middle of the dramatization.
Yeah, right at the middle, right when everything was happening. There was no, hey, this is a story, guys. We're about to do a play, kind of like what you hear sometimes on some of the radio dramas I play. They have the introductions like, hey, this is the Hall of Fantasy, and you know this story is entitled. They didn't hear any of that. They just heard it right in the middle
right
of the story,
right into the thick of things. Right.
Right. And the cool thing was the show was brought up in like news bulletins. That's how it was presented in the story. There were news bulletins, like news flash, like we interrupt this program to bring you this special bulletin. It was kind of those things. So that's kind of a reason why people were panicking when they heard it.
And it was very authentic. The actor who did the news bulletins throughout the broadcast had to prepare himself, had gone down in the studio and listened to a vinyl cut of the Hindenburg crashing. And the reporter that was really famous from that crash, they have recordings of them still.
Right.
He listened to that over and over and over again to determine how he was going to portray this character in this show. So he 100% sounded like a reporter on the ground.
Yeah, they did a lot of research to try to get this thing to be as authentic as possible. But
correct.
At the time, I mean, this was 1938. It was the tail end of the Depression. There were still people that were in serious debt. They were returning stuff to the stores, like their phones. They were making late payments on their houses. But radio was something that they were still selling a lot of. People were buying up radios, even though they couldn't afford their house payments and stuff. And they were selling them by the millions. So why do you think radio was so loved at this time?
It was the only, for one thing, it was really the only form of entertainment aside from reading books or newspapers. And then on top of it, they used it as an outlet. Like I was saying earlier about how they attribute a lot of the panic to the fact that people were listening to the comedy show first. The world needed comedy at that time. And there were shows that made people laugh. And I think that's how you congregated with your family in the evening, was to gather around the radio and have a good laugh and enjoy yourself. Things were still rather dark at that time. And dark was looming in front of them with all the different things that were going to be leading up to a world war. So radio was sort of an outlet for everybody. And I think people probably did choose that over making their house payment on time.
Yeah. Do you think that their love for radio was a big part as to why they were being duped by the broadcast?
I think the mentality, it's the same mentality we have now, I believe. I think that you're listening to something and you, I guess I don't know how to say that. I think that it's the same mentality we have now, where if someone posts something on Facebook about a fire, and 50 people automatically jump on and say they can see the fire, they can smell the fire. I think it's the same thing they did back then, where it's sort of a mob mentality. So if you're sitting there listening with your family and looking at each other, panic starts to rise and you start probably hearing things that really aren't happening, and your brain and your imagination is going faster than the actual broadcast. So I don't think they were much different back then as they are now. I think that could probably easily happen again. Except that we have more technology to look and see. Well,
right.
The news is saying that's not happening.
We have different outlets to go to. We could easily turn on the TV, watch the TV. We can still turn on the radio.
Right.
We can go on Facebook. We can go on NBC News. We can go to different websites. So it'd be a lot harder. But
it would be a lot harder. But I believe that. I mean, I've seen it myself on Facebook, the mob mentality, where someone posts that, I mean, something as trivial as a restaurant being bad, and then there's 50 people saying, well, I'm never going to go there because you said it's bad. Now that's ridiculous. That's just one
right.
person's opinion. But I think it's the same type of thing where you're listening and you're panicking and you're thinking, and and then other people are like in your room with you thinking, and then you just kind of get swept up. I think that's what it is. You get swept up.
Yeah. Well, it happens. But let's go back to the actual story itself. How did they decide to make a play out of War of the Worlds? Why was that chosen?
It actually wasn't their first choice. They originally wanted to purchase two other books, and I can tell you what they are. I have them written down because I wasn't really familiar. They knew that they wanted to do a science fiction episode for the Halloween show. So they had considered adapting The Purple Cloud by M.P. Scheele or Arthur Conan Doyle's The Lost World. And then they ended up purchasing the right for War of the Worlds. I believe that it was less expensive. Mercury Air Theater was not, again, and I'll probably say this again later, and I hope I don't repeat myself, it wasn't a sustainable program, meaning they didn't have commercial sponsors, so they didn't have a lot of money either. So War of the Worlds was written in, I believe, 1898. It was just less expensive than buying the other two books.
It was a good choice for them.
It was, definitely. And a little piece of trivia is that Orson Welles voted for War of the Worlds based on the name. He had never read it.
Yeah, well, speaking of him, who was the man behind the War of the Worlds broadcast? Who was the actual guy conducting everything?
Everything was Orson Welles, a 23-year-old. It's hard to believe now that he was only 23 years old.
He is. I mean, usually when... It's always weird because we see old pictures of our parents when they were younger and we're like, wow, they look old even though they're only like 18.
Right.
When I saw a picture of 23-year-old Orson Welles, I thought, you know what? I'm 33. He looks older than me.
Well, he also lived a very hard life. I mean, he rarely ever slept. He only ate red meat. He drank. He was burning the candle at both ends from the time that he was old enough to be out on his own and be pursuing his career. He was running from studio to studio. He had his finger in every single thing he could have his finger in. So, I mean, he definitely looked more haggard than most people probably do, but he was only 23 years old.
He's only 23.
During that broadcast.
Yeah, but a 23-year-old guy was pretty much in charge of bringing this thing to life. And boy, did he.
He did a really great job of it.
So yeah, that was Orson Welles. Very well known. He went on to do a lot of different stuff that we'll talk about later. So how many actors were involved with the actual broadcast?
I believe there were between 10 and 15 actors, but there was also a studio full of sound technicians and an orchestra.
Yeah, they had a full-on orchestra. They have pictures of the actual place where you could see Orson Welles like standing, giving his deliveries. And you can see in the background all of the heads that are everywhere.
Yeah, and they were all kind of huddled around probably two or three microphones.
Yes, this stuff was live, I think. So
this was definitely live, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't anything that they pre-recorded and then played it later. No, they were actually doing this live. If there were any mess-ups, they would continue going. There is no, oh, I messed up, I have to start all over again. They would go. It's not like this show. If I mess up, I will edit it out and you'll never even know it.
Right. And they had very little rehearsal time on this show. Orson Welles was working somewhere else at another studio at the time. So, and he was in charge of this. He was the director and lead actor for this. So he did not read the script or do the rehearsal until, I think, 11 o'clock the night before they were supposed to go on the air. So the night before.
Wow.
So when he read the script, he told them it was really boring. And they stayed up all night rewriting the whole entire script.
Man.
Just to rehearse. And really, really did a very small rehearsal. They didn't really do everything that they did during the actual broadcast.
Man, they probably had to go through a lot of rewrites to get this. Because they didn't have much time to do this. They did it, what, in a week, it seemed?
Well, they did. Yeah, they wrote the screenplay in a week and then rewrote it completely within 24 hours of the broadcast.
Yeah, so they were on top of this thing. And we keep mentioning the Mercury Theater on the Air. We keep mentioning that. But what exactly was it?
Mercury Theater on the Air. It was a serial dramatization radio show. It was just a series like what we have now. It was a series of radio dramas created live.
Yeah, just like all of the things that I play on Lyle's Mystery Theater, those are all Mercury Theater on the Air type shows. That look, I got The Hall of Fantasy, The Price of Fear, Quiet Please, Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Those are all kind of the same shows, just different networks. I mean, you have to think of them as like, think of them as all different sitcoms on shows. They're all, that's
right.
It's
exactly,
is,
yeah. To say, it's, it reminds me a lot of, we don't really have, well, we have variety shows now, like The Voice or any of those TV shows like that, but it's sort of the same thing. They were different variety shows back then.
Right, yeah. So that's kind of what Mercury Theater on the Air was. But the story itself, it took place in a very small town called Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Why was this location picked?
Completely randomly.
Completely by random?
It was a completely random choice of where they picked to have the asteroid / spaceship crash.
Did they just swing a map around and then put their finger down and say that's where it is?
Basically, it sounded good to pronounce the word, yeah.
Grover, it does sound like a nice place to go to.
It does. It sounds like a little farming community or something.
It does, like a place where nothing happens.
Yeah, until that night.
So the broadcast was told by news bulletins. Why did they decide to do that? Didn't they think that something like that would cause a panic?
I don't believe that they thought it would cause a panic. I think that they believed it would cause realism. And it was not a... It wasn't a novel idea. It had been done before, just not to that level. I can't remember the... I hope you can edit that out. I don't remember the shows, but it was done on two shows before. One in Europe, it was a European show that Orson Welles had heard and thought it was effective. He didn't know it would cause a panic, but he believed it was an effective way to tell a story.
It does sound like a very effective, authentic, real way. Because at the time, I mean, this is when Germany was about to invade for World War II. So a lot of people were on edge. And those news bulletin broadcasts were becoming very frequent.
Common.
Yeah, in people's, you know, everyday radio listening. So listening to something like that would really give it some sort of realism.
Well, not only that, they say in studies and research they've done after the broadcast, they've said that something like 46% of the people thought that the radio show was real life happening and that it was Germans invading New Jersey, not aliens.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. They weren't connecting it to being aliens when they first started listening, and what caused the initial panic is they thought that we were being invaded by Germany.
But no, it was aliens, supposedly.
It was aliens. It was aliens. Thank goodness, because they weren't real either.
Right. So the last question on the beginnings of War of the Worlds. Wasn't the program scheduled in the newspaper? Like, wasn't, like, kind of like TV Guide at the time? You go to the newspaper and you can see the listing of what's going to happen on the radio. Wasn't it scheduled?
It absolutely was, yeah. It was.
And people still found it to be real.
Well, I think because, I mean, they didn't have a thing like the TV Guide or Google to look things up. So you would get your newspaper on Sunday and you'd look at what was going on for the week and you'd probably think, well, I want to watch that Thursday night or I want to watch that Sunday night, and then didn't think about it again. And then didn't notice, like, didn't put two and two together when they tuned in and started hearing the news bulletins. They weren't even paying attention to what the show was called.
Oh, yeah, that could have been right. They could have just been like, hey, it's supposed to be World of the Worlds. Oh, but they interrupted that show because they're doing this news bulletin about aliens.
It's news bulletins, right. Exactly.
So that was the beginning discussion about the War of the Worlds. We are going to cut this into three different parts. So come back tomorrow so you can listen to the actual broadcast itself. Have a good night.